On this episode of Altered Geek, we'll talk what's geeky to you, SNL's hit short, Amazon's open door delivery system, the good, bad, and the ugly of the internet, and a lesson that you can learn from Bill Gates and Steve Jobs for your kids. All this and more on Altered Geek. Altered Geek is brought to you by Gamefly.com. Sign up today for a premium free 30-day trial with one game out at a time by going to GameflyOffer.com/AlteredGeek.
Do you start your day deciding which video game you're gonna play? You fight with your family over which is better, Marvel or DC? The geek of all of your friends, cause you know what, Batman beats Superman. This is the right place to be, so turn up the volume, cause you're an altered geek. Altered geek. Get altered, get geeky. Altered geek. From Star Wars to Star Trek, comics to tech. Altered geek. Get altered. Kiki, Altered Geek. Pull up a chair, cause you're an Altered Geek.
Hello and welcome to Altered Geek, the show where pop culture and living in the modern era collide and no topic is considered off limits. If it's something you're into and interested in, then I want to know so we can geek out together. I'm your host, Stephen C. Phillips, and as always, thank you for tuning in. So if you're looking to interact with the show, you can find everything at alteredgeek.com. Whether it's social media, contact, videos, other podcasts I'm directly involved with, and this very podcast. You can subscribe on there, you can share the podcast, or tell a friend. You can also rate and review this podcast on iTunes. It's been a little bit since we've had one of those. And you can also get involved in the conversation on social media by using the hashtag WhatsGeekyToYou, with what you've been geeking out with this week. So, I've been geeking out with a little bit of new information, just kind of been playing around with stuff with WordPress, learning some new podcasting skills, and haven't really been doing too much gaming. I've been spending more time watching my shows that have just come back from break. I've been talking on a variety of podcasts from the newly reamped top 100 countdown of the villains of forever. So that first episode will be out shortly after this one. A little bit of an interesting twist there. And so we have that coming out. We've got the new Legends of the Brave and the Bold, which is the retitled Legends of the Dark Knight podcast. So we can talk superheroes as well as Batman on that feed. And then we've got Future Imperfect and All Things Transformers. So if you want to hear my thoughts on Transformers, Star Trek, or superheroes, go to those podcasts. This one's more of a geek and kind of entertainment and kind of pop culture. Just kind of everything without getting all the specifics. So, getting into what's geeky to you, I have a couple things from Tim Silvers. First of which is the first that he was geeking out was the Star Wars The Last Jedi New York Comic Con experience of where they kind of locked everybody in a room and had stormtroopers and they had them trying to fish out the rebels, and then Kylo Ren comes in and the rebels are trying to get these certain people out. So it was kind of an interesting thing to watch. I've never been directly involved in one of those things, but I think they're really cool. So there's that. There's also the topic that I found, which I'll get into later. I don't want to spoil it too soon. I'm out of work for the weekend. I'm kind of excited because we're going as a family to this church family camp thing for the weekend, and it's called Family First, and I'm looking forward to it because I get to spend time with my kids and my wife. Try and get calmed down from the technology and a little reacquainted and having fun and worship stuff going on. So Yeah, just kind of excited for it. Going to be away for a couple of days, and I'm just kind of looking forward to being away for a little bit. It's been a while. So yeah, other than that, not really else going on. So I'm going to jump right into the content for the website of the week. And this week, I'm bringing you a website called getaudiograms.com. Some of you may not be familiar with this, but it's a service that when you submit your podcast to it, I forgot I'd even signed up for this a long time ago. The interesting part is they just launched their website, and I tried it back in January. Thank goodness for email and conversation gathering, where it splices everything together by conversation, because I would have never remembered the last time I talked to these great folks over there. They offered to, just to kind of get stats on it and see kind of what would happen. They were going around to various podcasters asking them to try their service and to kind of beta test it, and they did that for about 6 months. Well, they've come full circle. Now their website's launched. They're going to start doing it a little bit different way. And they contacted me, and I've actually been looking at doing this for some time now. Which is funny, because when I first heard of it, I was like, I don't know how well this is going to go over. And then after a while of noticing that other people were doing it and other sites were doing it, and how interesting it is, because you're not staring at a media player, you're not... It has a nice picture with it that you get to kind of embed, and you get to see the waveforms move, which I think is kind of interesting, even though it's a way to videoize it without having it look like blank screen, still image. So anyways, I like it. But it's a tool to help with social sharing and boosting marketing on your podcast. And a lot of services are starting to do this now. SoundCloud, Omni, a few other ones like that are doing it. So I'm going to try that out with some segments from the show. I'm going to try and put together a little small segment, bookend them with this, and then kind of see how it goes. And you guys just let me know what you think on future episodes of the podcast, what you think. I'm kind of curious. But if you decide that you want to sign up for this and you are a podcaster, do me the favor of going alteredgeek.com/go/getaudiograms. If you do this, it will allow me to earn credits, which when you earn credits, there are a couple of ways of doing this at this point. Right now, there's an ability to pay for a certain amount of credits, of 25 credits. You can refer a podcaster who would be interested in using Audiogram and get 20 credits. You can earn 100 credits by sharing your referral link and earning 10 credits per referral, up to a maximum of 100 credits. Not really sure where it's going to go from there, but I know that they create an audiogram for every credit that you have. So you can custom put this together and kind of have like a little gallery of your audiograms. So I'm going to try this out and kind of see how it goes, but I thought it was kind of a note and interest for those of you that are podcasters that would like to try and kind of take a best of your show for that week. And there is kind of another thing that I'm going to do that's with the segments, and I'm going to divulge that in the Geekcast Radio Year in Review podcast. Stay tuned for that in December. I've got some plans. So we'll see how well that turns out, because that's another little side project for me to do. So yeah, that's in a nutshell what that's going to be. So really, there's going from that, I found this interesting tidbit on This Week in Geek History. Because on Wednesday, October 25th, 2001, we saw the arrival of Windows XP, which... had I not been subscribed to these emails, there's no way I would have remembered this. Windows XP is the farthest thing from my mind at this point. And I mean, I remember the succession and the progression of Windows over the years, and I've had all the various iterations, and it was the most popular up to Windows 7, and then after 7, everybody kind of jumped on board with 10. But I thought it was kind of funny because it was the successor to Windows 2000 and Millennium and 98 Second Edition, and kind of designed to unify the Windows NT line and the Windows 95 line of or 9X line of operating systems. And it's funny because it kind of sat around for 6 years until it was replaced by Vista, which you really can't call a replacement until Windows 7 kind of came out. But yeah, I think it's funny that the thing lasted 11 years before it was kind of phased out. It was the world's most popular operating system until August 2012. And just going back and seeing the history of Windows like that is kind of interesting for me. But yeah. So I'm going to try out a new little segment here and just kind of bear with me because I'm not really sure how it's going to go. I have some tweaking to do, but I figured this was better than doing like the 10-minute blitz thing that kind of blew over like a stack of bricks landing on a Ford truck and in the middle of a tornado. So the segment you'll hear the clip for right now.
The good, the bad, the ugly.
So here we are on the good, the bad, and the ugly. So starting off with the good, there's a secret Netflix code to unlock hidden show categories. Had I known this the entire time I had Netflix, this would have been awesome. But it didn't. Because apparently there's secret codes to unlock the shows and movies you never knew were hiding in the Netflix library. Which I think is kind of blasphemous that it's just now something that's known. I mean, you knew they had these number codes, but the fact that somebody actually figured these out is an entirely different process. It's because, like, I always had a hard time finding stuff on Netflix that was new or stuff that I wanted to watch. But the fact that if you're looking for something very specific or you have no idea what you want to binge watch or whatnot, it's kind of interesting the other shows and films that are together by their genres or themes that are not shown. So, like, you can sort by, you know, horror, TV, you know, TV comedy. And there's, you know, there's thousands upon thousands of hidden categories which don't come up in the listing, which, again, I think is kind of wrong. But then again, there's, like I said, there's hidden ones. You know, you can kind of discover these new ones. So viewers have worked out how they can get to these secret themed groups which offer some seriously specific choices. these codes, which you plug into the web address to access, obviously, because there's nowhere else to do it unless you do it in the top. Each code refers to a specific category, many of which are far more niche than the basic categories anyone can see on the main Netflix homepage. If you want to know what the codes are, you can go to netflixcodes.me to find the code for your genre that you fancy. So, like, if you want, you know, for example, spy action and adventure, there's code 10,702. So you would do netflix.com/browse/genre/, and then this code. And then you copy and paste that into your URL, and then it loads them up. The fact that there's so many codes, there's action comedies, action, you know, action sci-fi and fantasy, action thrillers, alien sci-fi, an obscene amount of anime, there's B-horror, there's, you know, Belgian, campy, you know, there's classics of everything from movies, comedies, dramas, foreign movies, musicals, romantic movies, thrillers, sci-fi, TV. And the list goes on and on and on. But and then it goes through various, you know, like Italian movies, Japanese movies, Korean movies, you know, Latin movies, military movies, monster movies, movies for ages 0 to 2, 2 to 4, 8 to 10, 11 to 12, 5 to 7, you know, so you've got all these different categories of movies, which I would have never known. And this website, netflixcodes.me, actually updates all of these codes. And they have these little red buttons that if you click them on this website, it will actually load directly to that Netflix category, which I think is kind of cool. So if you don't want to bookmark Netflix itself and you want to watch one of these specific categories, it'll pop up with these. And that in and of itself is kind of awesome, really. But I thought that that was a really good thing to kind of start this out with, because if you're watching, there's some times where you're overwhelmed and just don't know what you're going to watch next. So I'm going to go into the bad with Amazon. Amazon.com. Amazon Key is bigger than package delivery. Yes, that was a title from Gizmodo. Doesn't matter what site you go to, but they're having a new service that lets couriers unlock your front door. So you'll need a smart lock and Amazon's new Cloud Cam. Yeah, I feel so totally comfortable letting someone randomly walk into my house. So, as we've noticed, you know, Amazon's putting lockers in nearby convenience stores and building lobbies and whatnot, and then showing off drones that could drop off your package to your, you know, backyard. Well, the next step is dropping it off at your front door and putting your package safely inside your home. Nevertheless, there's gonna be something that goes wrong with this, and for as technical as I am, I don't want one of those wireless Bluetooth locking systems for my door. I want the old-fashioned padlock, you know, decked up to the nines. Like, I don't want anything technological, because one, if the grid goes out, you're kind of screwed. Two, there's still a need for keys. Because the other stuff's more hackable. Not saying somebody couldn't just, you know, bash your door in for an honest person, but still, I don't know how I feel about putting technology on my entryway and letting somebody just walk into my house. So anyways, the Amazon Key relies on Amazon's new Cloud Cam and compatible smart lock. The camera is in the hub, connected to the internet via your home Wi-Fi. The camera talks to the lock over Zigbee, a wireless protocol utilized by many smart home devices. When the courier arrives with a package for in-home delivery, they scan the barcode, sending a request to Amazon's cloud. If everything checks out, the cloud grants permission by sending a message back to the camera, which starts recording. The courier then gets a prompt on their app, swipes the screen, and voila, they're in your house. They drop off the package, relock the door with another swipe, and are on their way. The customer will get a notification that the delivery has arrived, along with a short video showing the drop-off to confirm everything was done properly. So, yeah. The system works with locks from Yale and Kwikset. Okay, so Kwikset, I've used them before for my door system. So that's kind of good. The other piece is that the connected camera is made by Amazon, which means that they're just pushing to get further in your house between Alexa and, which I believe you can integrate with this for voice commands. So, yeah, they're planning on selling bundles and offering a subscription service for customers who wanted video archives and advanced home monitoring. Which kind of cuts into Amazon or Google's Alphabet's Nest brand and others in the smart home space like Ring and Logitech. So it's going to become available November 8th. Prime customers can pre-order the camera today, however, and yeah, I don't know if I would trust Amazon with entry into my home. With the amount of stuff that could go wrong with this, like, I am not in favor of somebody, like, this is just, I don't know. I, I like technology to an extent, but I think that there's a point where there's a laziness and overreach, and I just much prefer to have, you know, like, I trust my mail person. I'm not concerned with that, but that's just another thing that doesn't really need to be done. I can go pick it up from my mailbox out in the front of my house. And 99% of the time, I'm home. I work from home. I live at my home. Like, I will never find a use for this. My wife, she comes and goes periodically through the day and, you know, with the kids. And I'm literally the only one home at 90% of the time. Which I'm completely fine with. I'm working, so it doesn't really bother me because I have nowhere else I'm going to be leaving to. So, like, if I hear somebody knock on the door, I can run upstairs, bring my package in, and then just go right back to work down in my office, which is awesome. So, Amazon's set is going to have this bundle, which includes the smart lock, the connected camera, and free installation for $249.99. Once you have the system in place, in-home delivery will begin to appear as an option every time you order something on Amazon. There's no additional charge, and Amazon says the in-home delivery will be available on over 10 million items. Anything that isn't too big and bulky. The one caveat is that, for now, Amazon only trusts its own delivery team to handle this work, so your mail people will not count. So, eventually, they may have third-party delivery companies to handle this process. Like, I know my mail person. I'm not concerned about her. I don't know how I feel about Amazon dropping stuff off at my house. But if you want to find out more, you can go to amazon.com/key. The cameras themselves cost $120 individually. They may be cheaper if you buy in bulk, obviously, if you're doing it for business purposes or whatnot. Yeah, so that's kind of my bad. The ugly, I actually have two of these. Not sure if I want to touch one today. I think one would be more fun when I have Birdman Dot on, so I might save that one. I'm pretty sure I'm going to save that one because I know that that would be right up his alley. So the ugly would be clickbait online. And what I mean that is there are geek websites out there right now which purposely are publishing things. Like, I'm not saying that titles shouldn't be invoking of making people want to click them. However, when you get a geek site where, let's say, for instance, they're covering The Gifted, each episode of the series as it progresses, and they title it, and if you type this in, you will find out what website it came from, so I'm not saying anything directly derogatory about this website because I've used them in the past for information. However, I think that this is kind of a crappy and misleading way to go. They're titling every episode. They change the number, but they leave every episode title is Wolverine in the blank episode of, quote, The Gifted, quote, question mark. I do not, like, I add questions and I add the title information and I don't anymore put the type, you know, the name of the show or the podcast number or any of that in the titles of the shows. But I do that because, one, I'm wasting precious space on telling you what you're going to be listening to. And two, I don't want to be misleading about it. Like, yeah, I'm going to come up with some witty title like I used to, saying, you know, the Redux re-fandom, blah, blah, blah. Like, no, I'm just going to tell you what's in the episode for the most part. You know, leaving some to the imagination. But again, I think this is just kind of crappy titling. I've never understood why websites have had to have clickbait titles. And it's supposed to be a thought-provoking title that makes the person interested and invested in clicking, not clickbaiting them with basically a false expectation and hope to read your entire article to get the ad monetization and then be kind of left empty-handed by the end of the review. Like, if you're having to resort to that to do a review of an episode, you know, something's kind of off there. And I don't mean to put the website under the bus that did this, because each geek website has its own niche and has its own way of doing things, and each one has its own things wrong and right, that they do better or worse than the other. But at the same time, I don't see the merit in doing an editorial piece in this manner. I see it as misleading and just garbage. So, but anyways, I'm going to take a quick break. And after I come back, I'm going to cut into some information on Beetlejuice. Yes, you heard that right. And some Altered Geek TV and the SNL skit. Netflix and the Nielsen ratings, and some awesome tech before I get to the topic of the day. All this and more on Altered Geek. And we're back. So, getting into the Altered film, we have Beetlejuice 2, which apparently is not dead after all. So, you may or may not care, depending on who you are, but... Yeah, Beetlejuice 2 is in the rewriting booth, and it's been in the works for quite some time, mostly just like some other films, like Bill and Ted, and Beverly Hills Cop 4, and things like that. So Tim Burton and Michael Keaton, which are kind of reuniting for Dumbo, haven't been signed on yet to Beetlejuice 2, although they don't have high hopes that it will come out or be put together. But nevertheless, Warner Brothers wants to return to the land of Beetlejuice to try and get another bite of that 80s, 90s apple there. So what do you guys think about that? I would be down with seeing it just to kind of find out what they're going to do with it. But I'm kind of holding my breath. Well, not holding my breath because I'd be dead. Not holding my breath on this because I don't know whether this is going to be something that pans out or not, or it gets another rewrite, or it just never happens, or somebody dies before it comes out. Time will tell. I would love to see the people reunite for this film, but again, we just don't know what's going to happen. And if you're a fan of David S. Pumpkins, you are in luck. I never knew that after they came out with the initial skit last year of David S. Pumpkins, and then they had another one of David S. Pimpkins for this rap video thing that they did on SNL in May, just to be funny. They're coming out with, they've dropped a teaser for another David S. Pumpkins Halloween special, which is coming out, funny enough, on October 28th. And they're going to air it right before Saturday Night Live. So if you're a fan of Tom Hanks as David S. Pumpkins and you kind of want to know what's going to go happen in this, it's going to be Tom Hanks reprising his role as the popular character in an animated form when it airs. And it's going to feature Game of Thrones star Peter Dinklage as a guest voice. Hanks is one of SNL's, you know, obviously prolific hosts. So yeah, they're going to revisit this this bizarre sketch and give him his own episode. It will also include the voices of Bobby Moynihan and Mikey Day, who were the skeletons dancing next to him in the original sketch, as well as the new one. The fans of Pumpkin's inexplicable weirdness can get a taste of his return in the new video. I'm definitely looking forward to this just because it looks cheesy. It's got that TV Funhouse look to it. So I'm kind of just looking forward to seeing this just because I enjoyed the skit so much last year when it came out. That everybody, including myself, went out and bought different David S. Pumpkins domain names. There's one that's actually, it literally comes up first in the search engine. Like David Pumpkins or davidspumpkins.com, and then mine is imdavidpumpkins.com, which I tried to get the other one. It was already taken, unfortunately. So when this comes out, probably sometime Sunday, I will redirect that domain from alteredgeek.com to a clip of it. So on link to a post on Altered Geek. So yeah, I'm kind of a fan of the clip besides that. So I'm going to play a quick clip of the trailer bit right here and then kind of come back on the other side with tech.
Bowser! What's my name?
David S. Pumpkin!
Happy Halloween! Saturday, October 28th at 11:30 p.m. on NBC!
On your TV! I'm David Pumpkins. Any questions?
And we're back. So, yeah, gonna get into some altered tech here, man. I'm kind of looking forward to this. Yes, I realize I skipped over the Netflix ratings of the Nielsen thing, but they more or less said that Nielsen ratings for streaming show exactly and mean nothing. That's kind of Netflix's thoughts. I don't think anybody really honestly cares about the ratings from Nielsen anymore, other than the whole thing with advertisers. I don't think that streaming or, like, because they're trying to get their hands in podcasting, streaming, video streaming of anything, really. I think that there needs to be some kind of a new industry standard. I don't think that necessarily plays well into all of the different mediums there is now. So, but I saw this kind of cool tech gadget thing from Gizmodo, where they said there's a different way to get smart lights. Replace your switches, not your light bulbs. And they've said that, you know, smart homes have finally improved enough that having a home that responds to your every wish and command is almost within reach. And then they kind of show this option where you can... you know, have smart bulbs ranging from IKEA's $20 option to the $50 a pop for some Philips, you know, Hue expensive colored bulbs, not to mention anything else that's magically there. But this company called Noon wants to come in, and instead of replacing your bulbs, Noon hopes to improve your lighting by replacing the switches on your walls with smarter Wi-Fi connected alternatives. So for $400, the Noon Smart Lighting Starter Kit includes a master room director switch and two extension switches. That may seem a little pricey. I'm not somebody that would jump on stuff immediately when it comes out, but the thought counts. It involves ripping out your existing switches, faceplates, and electrical boxes and installing new ones. Which is a little bit more commitment than screwing in light bulbs, but you can kind of do it yourself. And so it's supposed to be this pretty easy to do thing. But they're partnering with InstallerNet, a service that connects installers with customers for a fee to connect these to their homes. They're saying once it happens, Noon claims its bulb discovery tech can automatically detect the type of bulbs you are using, so that they can use the mobile app to group various fixtures together, create different lighting scenes, and adjust their brightness, all while minimizing the flickering and popping you get from old dumb light bulbs. So no more dimmers or trying to remember if your new bulbs are the same wattage as your old ones. Noon does it for you. Which I'm kind of in favor of, because there's a lot of time I have no idea what is in my walls. And I have no idea what bulbs are in certain outlets, because, like, everything in this house that I live in is cobbled together. Everything. I have a light switch in front of my desk I cannot plug my computer into, because it's not on the ceiling. And the electrical outlet that is in front of my desk is hooked up to the light switch, which is hooked up to the light as well. So if I shut the light off, the power switch goes off. And the electrical outlet. I have yet to figure out why it does that or what I need to do to fix it. But I also have three sets of wires. That's right. I have three ground wires. I have three black wires and three red wires. Why every outlet in my house has that, I have no idea. But only, you know, certain ones are hooked up. And they're all like modern electrical wiring. So I'm not sure why that is. So I have to have an extension cord plugged into my computer across the room. So there's literally a cord that's been across my floor for the last 3 years. Not 3 years, about a year and a half, because I moved my desk around and built the desk into the wall. But I've had to do it that way, because every time I shut the light off when I leave the room for whatever reason, it shuts everything off, and then I'm like, argh! So yeah. But I'm kind of down with the smart switches. But they're saying that it's going to be available online for major retailers like Best Buy, Home Depot. They'll have individual room directors and extension switches available separately for $200 and $100 respectively. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing where this stuff goes. If I ever get the money to do something like this, that would be kind of the way to go. eBay, speaking of modernization, has launched visual search tools from your phone that let you shop using photos from your phone or the web, which I kind of like, because oftentimes you can find a picture of what you're looking for and can't remember the name of it. I have run into that so many times where I'm looking for something specific on eBay and I can't find it because I don't know what it's called. That's mostly my problem. So if you can do an image search and figure out what it's called by looking for it and it matches it up with other devices on eBay, that's actually kind of an inventive updating to the service, because I haven't used eBay in years. Mostly because I don't have the spare cash to throw at it anymore, but it's also because I just, half the time if I want something, I just go to Amazon, I buy it, and then I'm done. But there are times where I can't remember what I'm looking for, like the name of it. I can describe it all day long, but I can't tell you what it's called. So that's actually kind of a new inventive feature that I think is helpful. And then Microsoft's got a site called Sonar, which lets you check your website for performance and security issues, which I have independent ones that I use for that too, but that's kind of an interesting concept. And then, we have WordPress getting ready to come out with 4.9. They're in beta 4 right now. They tried, which I didn't even know this was a thing, but they're adding a new default editor, which is almost kind of like moviepilot.com editor. It's very bare bones. It's not... If you're used to WordPress the way it is, you're not going to like this update. Because they're talking about adding in this Gutenberg 1.5, which adds support for metaboxes. And it makes Gutenberg the default editor. It also, what it does is, like I said, it makes it get this new editor look like movie pilots for creating your posts, which I'm not sure if it's going to make it more simple or more of a pain in the rear to learn how to do. There's a new call to action that you can do, try Gutenberg call to action, where you can uncheck it and remove it. There's also a plugin that you can get that's Classic Editor, which gives you the option to use either one or the other, or both. So if you're kind of on the fence of trying that out, and you're a WordPress blogger or you have a geek site that's hooked up to WordPress, that's kind of an interesting way to go. It kind of takes a lot of the extra features out, which can be helpful if you've got too much crap in there. But if you're somebody like myself, I like things the way they are. They're functional. If it's not broke, why fix it? So it's kind of that boat for me. So I'm going to come back in a second with my topic, which started out the What's Geeky to You? So we'll be back after this. And we're back. So there's a couple of things that kind of tie into this. One of them is there was a thing done at one of the local television stations by me called Are We Addicted to Our Technology? And I kind of have to agree that yes, we are. And there's also another article that's from entrepreneur.com, which kind of leads into what Tim Silvers was going to mention. But this thing was called The Profit Report, Are We Addicted to Our Technology? It's saying that it's not just our kids who love their gadgets. Adults are rarely seen without a smartphone nearby. That is so true. More than 80% of smartphone owners said they never or rarely turn their phones off. I never turn mine off, but that's because I never know if I need it. It doesn't mean that it's not plugged in, but again, I digress. So, yeah, there's... there's apparently a significant overlap, but significant differences in the brain regions that are activated when somebody is excessively using social media compared to someone who has a gambling problem or a drug addict. They're saying that they're doing studies on this, but they're saying smartphones are definitely harmful for some people. Their problematic smartphone user has a number of negative effects, such as decreasing work performance, stress, anxiety, depression, interrupted sleep. The only time I get anxiety and stress from social media is when I'm in an argument with somebody and I have to be right. Usually if I open my mouth, I for the most part am. There are instances where I'm full of crap and I have somebody call me out on it. So they're saying that there's a few solutions for those people, that you can put your phone in a different room while you work. Can't do that, because if I do, I need it for my job. So they can, it says you can turn off notifications so they're not always wanting to respond immediately. I do that because I just have issues with the number showing up more so than anything else. They're saying that technology and kids should consider balancing tech time with real socialization. I think it's important to limit the number of time they're on social media or devices so they get face-to-face interaction, so they're skilled in that area. I completely agree with that. If you're one of those people that can't help but check your phone while behind the wheel, it may be time to take action, which, yeah. So, what Tim said is essentially, the article is called Bill Gates and Steve Jobs Raised Their Kids Tech-Free, and it should have been a red flag. He says, interesting. Not to mention, he also mentioned how he's looking forward to hearing the thoughts, and no, I'm already doing this with my son and monitoring his media, TV in general. Mostly why I'm monitoring my kids is, Toon Master Tim, sorry. Not Tim Silvers. So he had the Star Wars bit. Toon Master Tim had the bit on the entrepreneur part with the kids, so my bad, I called that wrong. So I like to keep my kids away from technology, and there's a number of reasons for it. One, I am so highly addicted to my technology, it's obsessive. I am into all forms of media, so I don't really put my device down. If I have a bored moment, I pick it back up. Not necessarily the right thing to do, but that's what happens. And I had a problem with technology as a kid. And despite my parents' better efforts, being my parents were divorced, my mom limited our time, my dad did not. And so when we were over, we would hang out, and then at night, I would literally be on the computer from 6 o'clock in the evening until 2, 3 in the morning. Not that much different than now, except for the fact I get on at 10 at night, and I go until 2:30 in the morning. And then I'm on during the day because I work from a computer, so I don't mess with any of my garbage during the day because I have to be able to focus. And it helps by setting those boundaries. So I keep my kids away from tech unless it's like very limited and it's real life instances, such as I have videos of animals or people teaching or educational programming, because my kids were getting too caught up in the animation part of it, as well as the bad language. My kids picked up on Disney's constantly saying, "Shut up!" And so my kids were running around the house saying that to literally everybody in and out of the house. So we stopped Disney movies and the word disappeared. We stopped letting them watch other shows too because they were picking up on other bad habits, and trying to bite and trying to do all this other stuff. So it just goes to show a lot of the stuff that they see does translate. And so I'm kind of trying to keep my kids away from it as much as possible. It doesn't necessarily mean I want to be like that, but at the same time, like even with our kind of biblical beliefs on what's kind of going on now, I don't necessarily feel that it's a bad thing to keep my kids away from it, especially with how ingrained in society the content has gotten. So I don't want to have my kids involved in it. Anyways, back to the article. They're saying psychologists are quickly learning how dangerous smartphones can be for teenage brains, which I didn't have a smartphone as a kid. I did have a cell phone, and I did start texting at that age, but I was on my computer a lot, or the computers at school. So it says that research has found that 8th graders' risk for depression jumps 27% when they frequently use social media. Kids who use their phones for at least 3 hours a day are much more likely to be suicidal because you're not getting real interaction with people or daylight. Vitamin D. They're saying a recent research has found that teen suicide rate in the U.S. now eclipses the homicide rate, with smartphones as the driving force. But the writing about smartphones risk may have been on the wall for roughly a decade, according to educators Joe Clement and Matt Miles, who came out with a book called Screen School. Two veteran teachers expose how technology overuse is making our kids dumber, which it is making everyone dumber. Look at spell check. Look how much we all depend on the magical spell check. Nothing has to be typed correctly. It gives us the red squiggly line. We can fix it. Or it suggests it to us when we text or type on the phone. And I kind of agree. Like, I've learned relearned how to spell words because my spell check. There are words that I've completely forgotten and erased from my memory that were gone because I just didn't remember how to spell them anymore. Because I don't physically write anything. I type. So I can kind of agree with that. So they said that it should be telling that two of the biggest tech figures in recent history, Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, seldom let their kids play with the very products they helped create. What is it these wealthy tech executives know about their own products that consumers don't? And it's, you know, the growing body of evidence is that addictive power of digital technology. We limit how much our technology our kids use at home. Gates, the former CEO, obviously implemented a cap on screen time when his daughter started developing an unhealthy attachment to a video game. He also didn't let his kids get cell phones until they turned 14, which the average age is 10. My kids will not have a cell phone until they're in their teenage years, unless it's absolutely mandatory, and they're going to have dumb phones if possible. They don't need it. Like, we have a laptop in the house. I have my computer. I have my wife and I have a smartphone. And then we have a Kindle Fire, which I use if I have to work on the go. Like, if I'm out of the house and it's after work hours, it's just easier if I carry it because then I don't have to lug around a computer. I could just work from that. Or if I need to fix something really quickly, it's just easier than doing it on my phone. So they're kind of saying that Gates wouldn't allow his children to have cell phones till they turn 14 because of the effects of too much screen time. I think it's also why we all have bad eyes now and attention spans, is because we're so used to the instant gratification of social media and technology and, you know, the fast pace of video games, and then the fact we stare at screens all day, which is why we have to have special glasses, or most of us are starting to wear glasses. The fact that these parents, you know, make a living by creating and investing in technology and then they don't let their kids have it, it's funny that modern schools that require devices like iPads, like Steve Jobs' kids would be some of the only kids opted out. You know, it's just things like that just make it even more reason why I'm kind of glad that I don't let my kids do this stuff. Like, we use pencil and paper for learning stuff for the kids, like, at home. It's not, you know, we do crafts, we do writing, we do, you know, penmanship. Like, there are some instances where visually learning information is better through video, but there are instances where you're better off with the, you know, chalkboard, marker board, number two pencil, you know, being taught skills like cooperation, respect, things like that. I don't know. There's instances where technology is better, but I think that taking this approach of learning in this method of kind of doing it the old school way is probably how you're going to get the most well-balanced individuals. So I'm kind of on board with their mentality with it, honestly. And then, of course, Forbes has this article that says people who work from home really get more done. And it's, you know, it's about boundaries. That's more so what it is. It's, you don't have people to talk to. You don't have the commute. You don't have the, you know, BS talk throughout the day that you normally would have, or, you know, as they call water cooler talk. I think that you're also happier to some degree just because you're not physically going somewhere. Although, you know, there are instances where that can backfire on you too. Like, you don't have the social interaction. You don't have the camaraderie with your coworkers. You don't have the ability to just walk in an office and say what you need done and check on stuff. Whereas if you're remote, you're not getting that. So it's, yeah, it's a lot of work to do it either way, but it's about setting boundaries mostly. That's a lot of it. I was terrified of working remotely and working from home when I started, and I actually love it now. And it allows me to see my family and not have to drive. I enjoy both aspects. And then if I need to fix something, if I'm already at home, it's not a big deal. I can just walk in my office, do it, and get out. So, but yeah, that about rounds out this episode. I hope that you guys had some fun, learned some things, and just kind of have kind of a well-rounded show this time. We did have listener feedback last episode, which came from Brad Mull, who says about the Jared Leto information. Please don't reboot Tron 3 with Leto. Hedlund and Wild have said before they'd return, but Kaczynski and Daft Punk need to be in charge of it. I agree. And then I talked about Audible. He says, I've had Audible account for a few years now. I don't have time to sit down and read a novel anymore, so I buy them digitally. I often buy the novels on my favorite films, but can't afford the continued monthly fee. I'm just glad everything is on Netflix in Australia and not several different streaming services because it's too expensive to sign up to everything. Oh, I feel you right there. I hate that everything is a different service here. And then he says, the dual screen phone would be interesting to have, but without a tough case, I'd destroy the screens. I did find out it's about $725. I am still interested in this, regardless. My wife told me I better start saving my pennies if I want to get it. So we'll see what happens. I'm not entirely sure. So, yeah, like I said, that about rounds it out this episode. If you want to interact with the episode next time, go hashtag what's geeky to you. And yeah, just let me know what's been geeky to you this week, what you're looking forward to, what you enjoyed about this episode, what you want different, and just kind of, if you got a topic idea, drop it my way. I'm looking forward to it. So till next time, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks.
Question. Yeah.